If he ever wins the Pulitzer Prize, the not the what's the prize in Oslo they give away every year for science?
The Nobel Prize.
They're going to play that Twister screaming backup thing.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't know if they give a Nobel for storm chasing. Though.
Well, you never know. I think Gizmo will probably win one before he does. But anyway,
I love Gizmo.
Just remember, when they give out the trophy, it's going to have backup written in quotes on it.
You got it. All right, welcome to Twister Talk. I'm Gary.
I'm Sue.
And I'm Brandon.
And we are very, very privileged to have somebody joining us from the Wilmington National Weather Service office, and we welcome Nate McGinnis to the show. Hey, Nate, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. Hey, we are really happy to have you join us, because we're going to have a lot of fun talking about this show, because we got a bunch of topics to cover, and we're going to talk to a weather guy actually does it.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what, Nate, to introduce everybody to the whole crowd here, why don't you talk about your weather, how you got to be a forecaster in Wilmington?
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's a fairly common story, right? Which is basically from the very beginning of my memory forming years, it was always about weather for me. Ironically, I'll be attending a 4-H meeting this evening, giving a meteorology talk. And I actually noticed that 20 years ago, when I was in 4-H, and they didn't have any projects that were weather focused, so I had to enter a self-determined project. I'm so unique that we had our own category for all these unique people to sort of compete against each other. And 20 years ago, I actually won first place at the Ohio State Fair, beating out all the other Ohio counties for first prize. So that was in the seventh grade. I remember when I was in third grade telling everybody, all my friends, you know, the Weather Channel is my favorite TV channel, and what a goofball, you know. I really was just that weird kid that everybody was always just like, he's going to be a weather guy. He's going to be a weather guy. I didn't obviously know what kind of weather guy I was going to be. As you probably can tell, I'm much more of a radio face type of a meteorologist.
You ain't alone there.
Yeah, ended up going into the National Weather Service in 2017. I started at Jacksonville, grew up in Ohio my entire life. So you want to talk about a change in scenery, a change in weather. Absolutely phenomenal experience down there. Probably don't have time to dig into everything that happened down there. But in 2017, just look at what happened in 2017 down in the Florida area.
Right.
And it was quite the first year. So eventually I got married and, you know, I just felt like my experience at Jacksonville was achieved. And I really wanted to get back to where I belonged, which is the Ohio Valley, which is where I grew up, you know, all four seasons, battling tornadoes, battling, you know, heat, cold, winter, flooding, and getting away from all the hurricane stuff. I mean, it's great to be, you know, neck deep in everything that goes on with hurricanes. But for me, it was, you know, just the climate down there was just very hard to get used to. And I just realized I needed to come back at least somewhere close to home. And, you know, fortunately, luckily, I was able to get into my dream office, my dream location.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you're back here with us Ohioans. But I can imagine going to Jacksonville. But that'd be like literally going across country and like, what have I gotten myself into with all the crazy weather?
I had two interviews. Mm-hmm. One was for Eureka, California, and the other was for Jacksonville, Florida. So I really had no choice getting, you know, being around Ohio. I mean, it was very difficult to get into the weather service, you know, 2016, 2017, coming out of the hiring freeze. Mm-hmm. And you really were just trying to get in anywhere that you could possibly get in. And I'm absolutely fortunate that I was able to get back to near Ohio and absolutely, you know, actually in Ohio.
That's great.
Only a couple years in my career.
Well, I noticed that you have a BS and MS from Ohio University in Athens. Yay, Ohio. Now, are those in meteorology or
scientists? Well, technically the first one, the BS is in meteorology. The MS is actually in geography with a focus in meteorology. So we still took, you know, dynamic meteorology, you know, at the graduate level. But it's just one of those things where it came down to semantics. They did not have enough faculty for an MS in meteorology. So technically it's an MS in geography. but it had a heavy meteorology focus. And if we even had a chance to get into my research, I think that would be a whole other podcast. But in short, I studied. I was one of the first people to just try. That's what science is all about, right? Just trying, hypothesizing, asking questions. And we've had some incredible mobile radar data sets come out with tornadoes where you're getting measurements of the tornado itself 60 meters off the ground, 150 meters off the ground. Just absolutely incredible imagery. And what I was tasked to do was to see if plotting that data, the velocity data, over the terrain, over elevation changes, could we conceptualize to some degree that elevation and terrain can influence tornado intensity. And obviously, like I said, it'd be a whole nother podcast, but it was a fantastic thing to dig into that data. I learned a lot of things, and really it's just another reason why I'm just completely fascinated by weather.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, that sounds like really groundbreaking stuff.
That's
there.
That's really interesting, because that's actually something we've discussed on the show off and on, is does terrain have influence on weather? And there's always been the discussion, well, we have a Indian mound outside of town, and it protects us from tornadoes. So to know that somebody's actually looking into it is kind of cool.
Yeah, it wasn't the first time that conversation had obviously taken place, and there were research done using the WSR-88D radars, which is the radars that the National Weather Service uses. But I was the first to just look at the mobile radar data sets. And, you know, these data sets had been looked through thousands of times for tornado genesis and you know, evolution of tornadoes over time. But really no one had taken that, placed it onto geographic informational systems, you know, GIS, and just seen what can we do with this data. And so, it was pretty phenomenal.
That's very interesting. I guess my question would be, do you have a short version of, does terrain affect tornado genesis or not?
Well, I'll be honest, as a scientist, we just didn't have enough samples.
Okay.
Conclusively. Mm-hmm. We only had 6 tornado data sets.
I mean, that's not many.
Just to give you some scale, when these mobile radars are out there in the field chasing these tornadoes down, they're often moving, trying to keep up with the tornado. Oh, yeah. The data sets were changing quite significantly throughout the chase, you know, as they're out in the field. And so there were just too many variables.
So the jury's out on that.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the great part about science, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like you need someone to take that step, because now just to kind of tell you how things are going to continue, the advisor that I worked under, Dr. Janet Hauser, she was at Ohio University. She's now at OSU, Ohio State. You know, they're going to be getting their own mobile radar. And
oh, wow.
I think it'll be really interesting to see. She was the one that helped me with this research. And so now she's going to have her own data sets. And you guys know Ohio's terrain.
It's
really variable across the state. So the science is not done. So, yes, the jury may still be out. But to be a part of at least that first step to figure out, the process, right? Figure out a methodology that can then be duplicated over time as more cases or more samples of tornadoes are taking place. So, I could go on and on.
Well, it all sounds promising, and anything to help tornado research is always a good thing to look at, because that's still, most people still think, and I do too, that's the last great mystery of weather. Tornado genesis and all the factors that come together, and why does one supercell produce an EF0 and one 40 miles away does an EF5?
Yeah.
And that's always been the thing we've wondered about over the years. Anyway, we're talking to Nate McGinnis from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington, Ohio. And Nate, we've had kind of some weird weather the last couple of weeks.
That's normal for Ohio.
That's normal for Ohio. You know, we wake up one day, there's sunny and 60, and 2 days later, 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Yeah, it's weird.
Please explain that to us.
I mean,
welcome to Ohio. If you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll just be honest. I think it's something that just a lot of states in the mid-latitudes experience, right? I know it's an Ohio thing. People say it a lot. I totally get it. But guess what? I lived in Florida for 3 years. They said the same thing down there, and I just wanted to slap them around a little bit and be like, guys, you don't know, you know, you don't really know.
No, you don't.
Because I can tell you this much, one of the biggest things for me was like, no, the weather is the exact same. Any time of the year, it can be 90 degrees, humid, and the wind is not moving at all, and this is horrible. So no, it's definitely something to me where when I'm out in the field, when I'm out doing outreach and I'm talking to the public, I get this question all the time, and I just try to tell them, you are just blessed to be in the part of the globe that has just incredibly hostile weather. You know, whether it's the low pressures coming off the Rockies, whether it's this moisture fetch from the Gulf of Mexico, whether it's the Appalachian Mountains to just kind of throw those in as well, or the Great Lakes. I mean, you're literally in a position that is so incredibly variable compared to other parts of the world. So you're blessed and just enjoy it, you know?
So you've answered a question for me. The National Weather Service, we always pass the blame to somebody else. It's somebody else. No, that's not our fault. That's their fault. So,
oh my God.
Brandon, I know you got a couple of questions, buddy, so I'll let you take the floor for a second and ask away.
All right. Well, you covered a little bit about one of my questions, which had to do with your interest in getting into weather. So I'm going to go ahead to something else here and see if you could just kind of walk us through a typical day at work for you, or whatever passes for a typical day.
No, I think this is a great question, and I'll do my best to be fairly quick with it, which is, I'll be honest with you guys. I've been in since 2017, right? So that's about 7 years. I just had my 7th year anniversary back in January. And even just in those 7 years, this question has changed. Like the answer, right? The answer to this question has changed. And it changes by region, you know, where you are with regards to what weather, you know, what seasonal variability that you have, and obviously the patterns itself. Because I can tell you in Jacksonville, every single day from like April 15th to the end of September, you're tracking sea breezes, you're tracking lake breezes, you're tracking all these individual boundaries. And meanwhile, in the back of your head, after you've issued hundreds of severe thunderstorm warnings and flood advisories throughout the summer, you're just waiting for that category 3 to be coming across the Atlantic with really just low uncertainty on where it goes. So here in Ohio, you know, the biggest difference that I would say is that there isn't as confident of a dry or wet period, right? We track seasonal patterns, El Nino, La Nina. There can be periods of dryness, and we try to take advantage of those. But just if you want to talk about what the Weather Service does, weather forecasting in its very basic form, we go out 7 days. The local weather forecast office goes out 7 days. We use a collaborative forecast process, one that starts with what's called the National Blend of Models. Not sure if you guys have heard that before, but when I first started my job in Jacksonville, I was sort of given a recipe. Well, here's what works in Jacksonville, right? And then if you're out of whack with your neighbors, Melbourne, Tallahassee, well, you got to just kind of make the boundaries work. But now with the National Blend of Models, every forecast office is now starting off on the same trajectory. It's this blend, this calibrated blend of guidance that takes over 100 models and their individual members and puts together a sort of 7-day forecast in its very basic sense. And then the work kind of really begins. So we have a 7-day forecast, but then it comes down to the details. Where are the models maybe out of place? Where are our high-end impacts that we can maybe expect in that 7-day period? We are now communicating with our core partners even beyond the 7-day period, you know, with CPC and the Climate Prediction Center and the Weather Prediction Center. We're now trying to stretch the limits for, can we find a hazard in 10 days? And can we be confident with that? And the most recent example that I can give you is actually the December 2022 flash freeze. That impact across the entire Great Lakes and Ohio Valley region was forecast with impeccable accuracy.
Yeah, it was.
Almost 8 to 10 days in advance.
Even down to the timing.
We knew that, you know, on December 22nd, it was just going to, the cold air was just going to rush in. And yeah, sure, you may have a model here or there that goes, oh, here comes another cold blast 10 days out. And it's like, that, you know,
right.
We got to be a little iffy on that. But for whatever reason, this particular event seemed incredibly high confident. And that's where I'm trying to tell you that the day-to-day routine is actually so incredibly different, even from when I started. And I can tell you the people that I work with that started working in early 2000 or in the 1990s, this is a whole new world. You know, we're in a whole new world with weather, and especially when it comes to the daily routine. So, yeah, we do a daily forecast.
You absolutely answered the question. I think you gave us more than we could have ever hoped for there. So certainly appreciate that. And it leads into the next question that I wanted to ask here. In the time that you've been doing this, what would you consider to be the single most significant shift in scientific thinking that you've witnessed regarding how weather works and how forecasting should be approached?
I would say for me personally, it's the vulnerability of our citizens. I think, you know, when I was going through school, you're learning about the theory, right? The dynamics, the thermodynamics, mm-hmm. you're learning the physics, the math, and then eventually you're applying that theory in school. But there's one thing that the education really struggled to, I would say, emphasize, which is that when you're dealing with impactful weather and you see it coming 3, 4, 5 days in advance, I'm not just thinking, what is the weather telling me? Or what can I do about getting the weather forecast right? Because as I said ahead of time with Gary, a perfect forecast is going to be meaningless if nobody knows how to receive the information and if nobody knows how to react to that information. And I think that, to me, has been the biggest shift, is it's not even necessarily about the science of meteorology. It's the communication of mm-hmm. that. Because here in the United States, there's really no other country that has the type of weather service provided to their citizens that we do. And I think we should always be thinking about how we should evolve and how we should be using our time wisely to serve our citizens the best way. And I think I'm trying my best to be a better communicator, break outside of the little office where I get to sit behind 5 screens that mm-hmm. are 29 inches and I can just be so involved in the data.
Right.
But if I'm not communicating that well enough to the rest of the weather enterprise, mm-hmm. to the public, it's going to be for naught. It's just not simply going to be enough.
And thanks for joining us on Twister Talk today for part one of our interview with Nate McGinnis from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington, Ohio. On the next Twister Talk, we'll be talking more with Nate about blizzards, severe weather, and, well, everything else in between. So for Sue and Brandon, I'm Gary. Thanks for joining us for Twister Talk. We'll see you next time.